It's so good to have each of you back if you've been away. How many of you got back before the snowfall? Did you get back in before the snow came? Let me see your hands if you did. How many of you did not get back before it came? Okay, most of you did. That's a change. For the last 2 or 3 years, you've been right in the middle of coming back, and the snow or the ice would come, and we'd have a lot of anxiety about your safety. But we're sure glad you're back. We miss you when you're gone. It's a good miss in some respects. We're glad to get rid of you for a while, but it's not very long until we're just kind of pacing the floor waiting on you to get back. And we're glad you're here. You're like a pacemaker to a heart patient. You kind of get us going. Or you like adrenaline. You're my adrenaline shot. And I just can't get along too well without you. It's good to have you back. The singing is always better when you're here. There's an enthusiasm that's catching. You can't know what an encouragement you are to the rest of us who are here all the time. Tonight, those of you who are new, especially new freshmen or new transfer students or whatever, tonight is your night at 7:30 out at the Freeway Park. We're going to have a skating party, a get acquainted party, kind of break the ice. And we want you to be our... No. Yeah. Not like that. We'll get to know each other, and we'll have just a real good time skating together. And then about 9:30, Terry's going to speak to us, and we'll have a devotional as we close the night out. But it's just excellent. We have two of these a year, and I kind of serve as the host and the police on the floor, and it's a good way to get to know your fellow students. And those of you who are older students or older members and like to skate, please come on out. And those of you that can't skate, come on out and try. We'll have a hospital bowl while the Pro Bowl is going on. But seriously, we want you to come and be a part of it tonight and get to know each other better. And then those of you who'd like to go with Terry and Charlotte over into the campus for the Sunday night fellowship at 7:30, that's available also. May God bless us while we study together. It is God's will that his kingdom grow and that his lost sheep be found and brought home. Now, I don't think anyone can question that basic foundational fact. It is God's will that his church grow and that his sheep be found and brought home. This is the main message, I believe, of the parables. It isn't the message of all of the parables. It isn't the message even of the majority of the parables. But it is the one single most often recurring message of all the parables. Consequently, we hear Jesus talk about mustard seeds that grow up into large bushes. And he says the kingdom of heaven is like that. And he says also, he talks about the yeast that's in a portion of dough. And it begins in a little small part of it, and then it works gradually, silently, but certainly throughout the whole measure of the dough. We hear him talking about nets being filled with fish. We hear him talking about banquet halls being filled with wedding guests. And the excitement that goes with the coin that was lost being found. And the sheer joy that accompanied the shepherd's call to his neighbors, "I've found my lost sheep." And then the heartwarming story of the lost boy, whose father ran to meet him and fell on his neck and kissed him much. Jesus says, this is what the kingdom is about. And then you see in the Great Commission, you see his great passion for lost souls reflected as he tells his disciples, go, tell all nations about the good news. Whoever believes it and is baptized will be saved. So I think it goes without fear of questioning that it is God's will that his kingdom grow and that his lost sheep be brought back home. Hear then a parable of the kingdom that substantiates this. Listen. A sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seed fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured it. Other seed fell on rocky ground where it had not much soil. And immediately it sprang up, since it had no depth of soil. And when the sun rose, it was scorched. And since it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no grain. And other seeds fell into good soil and brought forth grain, growing up and increasing and yielding 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. And so we find this parable. And of this parable, Jesus says something that he said about no other parable. After he told the parable, his disciples came up to him and said, "Would you explain to us that parable?" And he said, "Don't you understand this parable? How then will you understand all of the parables?" So much to say, why, this is the very heart of all of it. This is the principle that governs all of my parables. And if you can't understand this one, you won't be able to understand any of them. And so then he tells them the meaning of the parable, and you're familiar with the meaning. We'll not go into the meaning this morning. The main thing I want you to see is that God is dealing with increase, and it is the nature of his kingdom to grow, some 30-fold, some 60-fold, and some 100-fold. So it is indeed the will of God that his kingdom grow and that his lost sheep be found. In fact, in Matthew, the 18th chapter and verse 14, Jesus says this, and it's a quotation. "It is not the will of my Father that any one of these little ones should perish." Now, that being the work of God, that being the will of God, that being the business of God, may I ask, is that your business? Is that your will? Is that your work? What if it is not your will to do God's will? You see, this is his will, that not a single tiny one even be lost. That's his will. Do you pray, "Lord, not my will, but thine be done"? If you do, then you're asking him to let you be involved in his work of bringing lost people back to himself. But what if that's not your will? What if you have your mind other places? What if you have your mind on your business? And that's where all of your mind stays all of the time. And you never think about bringing anybody back to God. What if you choose to not be involved in God's work? What then? Is there some indication in the scriptures that will give us an idea about what God has to say to us if our mind is not his mind and our will isn't his will and our business is not his business and our work is not his work? Yes, there is. Now, that this is true does not indicate that we all have the same talent, nor do we have the same gift or the same assignment. It does not mean that we are all equally productive. For even in this parable that I just read, it says that some of the good soil only brought forth 30%. Others brought forth more, 60, and still others brought forth yet even more, 100% yield. So he's not judging us all equally because we're not all equal. And he didn't give all of us the particular same task. Some of us are plowers. Some of us are planters. Some of us are waterers. Some of us are reapers. But nevertheless, The gift that you've been given by God has been given for one purpose. That's to do God's business. He didn't give you the gift to do your business. He gave you the gift to do His business. What if you don't want to use your gift to do His business? Hear then a second parable of the kingdom. For it will be as when a man going on a journey called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing the 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents, and here I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, you good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also who had the 2 talents came forward, saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents, and here I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not winnow. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I have not winnowed? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what is my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one that has 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and he'll have abundance. But from him who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There men will weep and gnash their teeth. What if we choose not to use our talent in God's business? He says there's coming a day of reckoning. And on that day, when he comes to take an account of his servants, he's going to ask you, did you use the gift that I gave you to do my business or not? Some of us will have to say, well, Lord, I never did discover my gift. Do you mean to tell me, he perhaps will ask, that you have been a servant of mine for 40 years and you never did find out the gift that I gave you to do my business? Others may have to say, well, Lord, I just never could get very interested in doing your business. Reaching people and talking to them or serving them or befriending them or loving them, it just wasn't my cup of tea. You'll have to forgive me, Lord. But he'll say, take this unprofitable servant, take the talent away from him, give it to the one that has 10, and throw this one in the outer darkness where men weep and gnash their teeth. What if you are only that 1 talent man? What are you going to do? We've got a meeting coming up this week, and here Brother Allen stands, a 5-talent man in regard to his preaching ability. What is he going to do? Well, he could hide his talent, but he's decided not to. There are other 2-talent people. But then there's a whole slew of us who are just 1-talent people. What are you going to do with your talent? Maybe all you can do is just bake a cake for a neighbor who is a newcomer to town and say, would you go to the meeting with me tonight? Or maybe you, as a wife, can call up a neighbor and say, you and your children and your husband, come over and eat supper with us Tuesday night and let's go to the meeting and hear Jimmy Allen preach. Or it may be that all you can do is just simply be kind or befriend someone and then hope that maybe years later he'll be able to hear the gospel too. You may have a simple tongue. All you can do is just tell what God has done for you and tell how much he means to you in your life. how it perhaps saved your marriage, how it saved your children. You may not be able to take them on any great theological discourse and tell them about a lot about what God can do for them, but at least you can tell him what he's done for you. Or you may have a more adept tongue, a more complicated tongue. You may be able to go to the scriptures and actually sow some seed that will lead that person to a direct knowledge of God. You may be able to do that. Or you may be able just simply to come and put your arm around somebody and just simply say, I'm praying for you. Are you about God's business or not? Do you look at people through the eyes of God and see them as lost sheep to be saved? Or do you look at them as sheep to be sheared? Makes a difference. Are you doing God's work? What if you choose not to do God's work? You're going to be lost. So will I. As you contemplate this question, let me ask us another question. Are you really and truly engaged in doing the work of God daily? And as you contemplate the answer to that question, let me read you yet another parable. I dreamed I drove on a Florida road, still and straight and empty. On either side were groves of orange trees, so that as I turned to look at them from time to time, line after line of trees stretched back endlessly from the road, their boughs heavy with yellow round fruit. This was harvest time. My wonder grew as the miles slipped by. How could such a harvest be gathered? Suddenly I realized that for all the hours I had driven, and this was how I knew it must be a dream, I had seen no other person. The groves were empty of people. No other car had passed me. No houses were to be seen beside the highway. I was alone in a forest of orange trees. But at last I saw some orange pickers. Far from the highway, almost on the horizon, lost in the vast wilderness of unpicked fruit, I could discern a tiny group of them working steadily. And many miles later I saw another group. I could not be sure, but I suspected that the earth beneath me shook with mourning at the hopelessness of their task. Yet the pickers went on picking. The sun had long passed its zenith, and the shadows were lengthening when, without any warning, I turned a corner of the road to see a notice, leaving neglected county, entering home county. The contrast was so startling that I scarcely had time to take in the notice. I had to slow down, for all at once the traffic was heavy. People by the thousands swarmed the road and crowded the sidewalks. Even more startling was the transformation in the orange groves. Orange groves were still there, and orange trees in abundance. But now, far from being silent and empty, they were filled with the laughter and singing of multitudes of people. Indeed, it was the people we noticed rather than the trees. People and houses. I parked the car at the roadside and mingled with the crowd. Smart gowns, neat shoes, showy hats, expensive suits, and starched shirts made me a little conscious of my work clothes. Everyone seemed so fresh, so poised, and so enthusiastic. Is this a holiday? I asked a well-dressed woman with whom I fell in step. She looked a little startled for a moment, and then her face relaxed with a smile of gracious condescension. You're a stranger here, aren't you? She said, and before I could reply, she said, This is Orange Day. She must have seen a puzzled look on my face, for she went on, It is so good to turn aside from one's labors and pick oranges one day of the week. But don't you pick oranges every day? I asked her. One may pick oranges at any time, she said. We should always be ready to pick oranges, but Orange Day is the day that we devote especially to orange picking. I left her and made my way further into the trees. Most of the people were carrying a book, bound beautifully in leather and edged and lettered in gold. I was able to discern on the edge of one of the books the words, Orange Picker's Manual. By and by, I noticed around one of the orange trees, seats had been arranged, rising upward in tiers from the ground. The seats were almost full, but as I approached the group, a smiling, well-dressed gentleman shook my hand, took my arm, and conducted me to a seat. There, around the foot of the orange tree, I could see a number of people. One of them was addressing all of the people on the seats, and just as I got to my seat, everyone rose to his feet and began to sing. The man next to me shared his book with me. It was called Great Songs of the Orange Grove. They sang for some time, and the song leader waved his arms with a strange and frenzied abandon, exhorting the people in the intervals between the songs to sing more loudly. I grew steadily more puzzled. "When do we start picking the oranges?" I asked the man who had loaned me his book. "It's not long now," he told me. "We like to get everyone warmed up first. Besides, we want to make the oranges feel at home." I thought he was joking, but his face was serious. After a while, a rather fat man stood up from the song leader and, after reading two sentences from his well-thumbed copy of the Orange Picker's Manual, began to make a speech. It wasn't clear whether he was addressing the people or the oranges. I glanced behind me and saw a number of groups of people similar to our own group gathering around an occasional tree and being addressed by other fat men. Some of the trees had no one around them at all. "Which trees do we pick from?" I asked the man beside me. He didn't seem to understand, so I pointed to the trees round about. "Oh," he said, "this is our tree," he said, pointing to the one we were gathered around. "But there are too many of us to pick from just one tree," I professed. "Why, there are more people here than there are oranges." "But," he said, "we don't pick oranges," the man explained. "We haven't been called. That's the imported orange picker's job. We're here to support him. Besides, we haven't been to college. You need to know how an orange thinks before you can pick it successfully. We call it orange psychology." "Most of the folks here," he went on, pointing to the congregation, "have never been to manual school." "Manual school," I asked. "What in the world is that?" "Why, it's where you go to study the orange picker's manual," my informant went on. "It's very hard to understand. You need years of study before it makes any sense." "I see," I murmured. I had no idea that picking oranges was so difficult. The fat man at the front was still making his speech. His face was red, and he appeared to be indignant about something. So far as I could see, there was rivalry with some of the other orange-picking groups, but a moment later, a glow came over his face. "But we're not forsaken," he said. "We have much to be thankful for. Last week, we saw 3 oranges brought into our baskets. And now we're completely debt-free from the money we owed on the new cushion covers that grace the seats you sit on." "Isn't it wonderful?" the man next to me murmured. I made no reply. I felt that something must be profoundly wrong somewhere. All of this seemed to be a very roundabout way of picking oranges. The fat man was reaching the climax of his speech. The atmosphere seemed tense. Then, with a very dramatic gesture, he reached 2 of the oranges, plucked them from the branch, and placed them in the basket at his feet. The applause was deafening. "Do we start picking now?" I asked the informant. "What in the world do you think we're doing?" he hissed. "What do you suppose this tremendous effort has been made for, anyway? There's more orange-picking talent in this group than in all the rest of Home County. Thousands of dollars have been spent on the tree that you're looking at." I apologized quickly. I wasn't being critical, I said. "And I'm sure the fat man must be a very good orange picker, but surely the rest of us could try. After all, there are so many oranges that need picking. We've all got a pair of hands, and we could read the manual, at least begin." "When you've been in the business as long as I have, you'll realize that it's not as simple as that," he replied. "There isn't time, for one thing. We have our work to do, our families to care for, and our homes to look after. But I wasn't listening. Light was beginning to dawn on me. Whatever these people were, they were not orange pickers. Orange picking was just a form of entertainment for their weekends. I tried one or two more of the groups around the trees. Not all of them had such high academic standards for orange pickers. Some held classes on orange picking. I tried to tell them of the trees that I'd seen in neglected county, but they seemed to have very little interest. "We haven't picked the oranges here yet," was their usual reply. The sun was almost setting in my dream, and growing tired of the noise and the activity all around me, I got in the car and began to drive back again along the road I had come. Soon all around me again were the vast and empty orange groves. But there were changes. Something had happened in my absence. Everywhere the ground was littered with fallen fruit. And as I watched, it seemed that before my eyes the trees began to rain oranges. Many of them lay rotting on the ground. I felt there was something so strange about it all, and my bewilderment grew as I thought of all the people in Home County. Then booming through the trees, there came a voice which said, "The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest, that he will send forth laborers into his harvest." And I awakened, for it was only a dream. Or was it? Now let's talk just for a moment about our meeting. We've got a meeting beginning tonight at 4 and at 6, and every night at 5:30 and 7:30. And it's a great opportunity to pick oranges. Well, it's a good opportunity to crate them. It's a good opportunity to assemble them. But this isn't where the orange grove is. This is just the assembling plant. Jim is a good orange picker, but he can't pick for you. Those of you in Cathcart, that's your orange grove. Those over in Armstrong, that's your orange grove. And those of you in the new girls' dorm, that's your orange grove. And those of you in every community, the block where you live is your orange grove. The business where you work, that's your orange grove. And there are orange trees full, and the fruit is falling to the ground. And if you don't pick it, it's not going to be picked, not for the Lord. Are you willing to be an orange picker? Oh, but you say, "That's not my talent." Oh, but it is. And it may be that all you do is just simply shake a limb and somebody else may catch them. It may be that all you can do is just shake their hand and encourage them to be picked. But something, somehow or another, your talent has been given to you, has been given to you by the Lord to accomplish his work. He has appointed all of us to some part of this task of picking oranges. Is the parable that I just read, is that clear to us, the application? Did we get that? Did we understand it? It comes too close to home to leave me with anything but a feeling of discomfort. Well, these three parables, I leave them with you. Will you go home today and examine your heart to see what your gift, your talent is as it relates to what God has as his business for you and me? Tonight at 4 and 6, what are you coming back for? If it's to be entertained, forget it. I'd stay home and watch the Super Bowl if I were you, if I was just coming to be entertained. It's going to be a whole lot more entertaining. If you're coming to be edified, that's wonderful. But there's got to be more than that happen. We've got to come and be about God's business. And that means doing something to bring somebody to hear the gospel of Christ. And it may be that all we can do is just send this murmur all through the campus. "You going to the meeting tonight? Go to the meeting with me. Let's go and have a Coke after the meeting. I'll I'll take you and shout you a Coke. Or go home and eat dinner with me tomorrow, and let's go to the meeting tomorrow night. On and on. It could be just rumbling all through the community. This is what we must do as we orange pickers be about our business. And then we gather all these oranges that are unpicked and bring them here and allow perhaps a picker or a processor or a packer to bring these into the garner, bring these into the Lord's harvest. This is what it's all about. In Luke 10:2, Jesus gave us a command. He said, pray. Pray that the Lord of harvest will send forth laborers into his harvest. Would you pray with me in that respect this morning? Loving Father, we come before thee this morning with thanksgiving for allowing us to be spared to this good hour. We come confessing also that we've not been about your business as we should have been. We've become sidetracked. And often we've allowed just what we're doing today to be an entertainment for us for our weekends. And we've put off on others the work that we ourselves should have been doing. Many of us have buried our talents. Many of us have not done your will. Father, forgive me for being cool or lackadaisical in my task. Help me to fan my gift into a flame. We ask your richest blessings upon Jimmy tonight and throughout this week. And we ask your blessings upon each one of us as we be about your business this week. Lord, we love you, and our failure has not been because we don't find in you the things that are lovable and are of ultimate worth. But thorns have choked many of us to where we're not producing. Shallowness of soil has caused us to not produce. And perhaps some of us, the word never has even entered our hearts. But will you bless us now one more time? Give us one more chance and send forth laborers into your vineyard, and may we be those that you send first. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's stand and encourage each other now as Ken leads us in this great song. Let us stand.